Right now, I'm mostly doing research on the large scale structure and on inflation. And I chose this topic for the talk because it nicely combines both things. So I'm going to talk about some consistency relations, some relations between n plus one correlation functions and endpoint correlation functions that you can write for perturbations during inflation and also and carry those all up to the large scale structure. This is, I think, one of the few calculations where you can take the calculation from inflation to the large scale structure. That's pretty nice. And but I also work on other topics, both in the large scale structure and inflation. So I recently participated in a measurement of the nonlinear bias from SDSS data. That's regarding large scale structure. And I'm also interested in models that generate scale invariant tensor modes during inflation, but right now I want to look at alternatives to inflation that manage to generate scale invariant tensor modes. We showed that you cannot do it with a vacuum, but you cannot do it if the tensor modes are perturbations are generated by the vacuum. But yeah, I'm right now looking for alternatives. Okay, so back to the topic. You can't generate scale invariant. You can't generate scale invariant perturbations for the tensor modes away from the sitter if they are generated by the vacuum.
Okay. How far away from the sitter?
Well, you cannot do it in an FRW. So, for example, for scalar perturbations, you could do it by varying the speed of sound in time.
Okay.
You cannot play the same game for inflation because for the tensor mode. Sorry. You can redefine. Yes. You can do this formal transformation that sets the speed of gravitons to one. You can always do it.
Right.
Okay, so we showed this recently. And I'm looking for ways to generate scale invariant perturbations in some other way, not with the vacuum.
Can you try to do a similar thing to what you do with EBI, where you take some non-strange kinetic term?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. If you do that, if you expand to second order perturbations, this would look like having a different speed of propagation for the gravitons, okay? But the thing is that you can always do you can always reabsorb this in a field redefinition, through a field redefinition. So at the end, in the frame in which you reabsorb the speed of sound, you set it, the speed of gravity waves, you set it back to one. In that frame, we showed that you are always the sitter. You always have a de sitter background or a quasi de sitter background in that frame. Okay, but that's okay. We can chat about it later. That's not the topic of. Yes, yes. Well, it was this year. Yes. August. It hasn't been published yet. It's about to be published in PRL. Yeah. It has been accepted to PRL, but yeah, it's on the archive. It's from August. Okay, so but that's not the topic. We can, if you have questions, just feel free to ask me. I'll be around all day until late. So I wanted to talk about these consistency relations. First, I'll give you some introduction, giving you an intuitive feel as to why these relations hold. And I'm going to try to convince you that they are really very simple physics and therefore very robust. Then I'll go to a more formal derivation using what Weinberg calls adiabatic modes. Then I'll introduce the new consistency relations that we found. And a technical but important point, I'll list the conditions under which these relations hold, and therefore what they are testing. And at the end, I want to build relations for the galaxy number over density. So I'll have to tackle the issue of galaxy bias, and finally write down a consistency relation for large-scale structure observables, which will be relativistic and non-perturbative. And I think it's the only result that is both relativistic and non-perturbative for the large-scale structure that has been written down. Okay? So just to make some intuition, so consider a galaxy. A galaxy is a very complex object. Not only does it have very non-linear physics in the sense of cosmological perturbation theory, but the baryonic physics is very hard to simulate. Not only because it has very complicated hydrodynamics, but also due to things like supernova feedback or AGNs and things like that. But no matter how complex a galaxy is, we always know that in the present, that if you put it in a constant gravitational field, this constant gravitational field is not physical, because you can simply redefine it away. You can shift it as you want. This is your Newtonian intuition. And you also know that a constant gradient of the gravitational field is a constant gravitational force. And you know that you can go to an accelerated, this is equivalent to going to an accelerated frame. Okay? So you also know that you can set it to zero by going to some accelerated frame. And so you know that also a gradient is not a physical thing. And so you can compute the effect of a constant gravitational field and a constant gradient of the gravitational field on very nonlinear, very complicated, short-scale physics. Okay, and this is the idea. You can compute it simply because it's not physical. And this is all there is to these consistency relations for the large-scale structure. So we will be interested in the limit in which we put some very nonlinear, short-scale perturbations in a gravitational field, which you can approximate as a constant plus a gradient. So this is a limit in which the characteristic momentum of this long mode is much smaller than the characteristic momenta of these short modes, which we will correlate. And this allows us to compute the squeeze limit of a correlation function. So consider this correlation function between, say, dark matter over density and the gravitational field. In the limit in which this momentum goes to zero, it will be the correlation of this gravitational field with the endpoint function in the presence of that field. So this average here is with a conditional probability. This L means that it's an average with a conditional probability that in at large scales, the gravitational field takes this value. So you can compute it this way. So in order to compute this squeeze limit, you just have to compute how the large scale gravitational field affects the short scale dynamics. And we know that, and I just showed you in the previous slide, that this thing is exactly computable if you can approximate the gravitational field as a constant plus a gradient. Okay, and this was done for this Newtonian, in this Newtonian limit, by these people. But we are interested in going beyond the Newtonian approximation. We're interested both in inflation, where these ideas originated actually, and we are also interested in very large scales for the large scale structure. So we have to the purpose of this talk would be to generalize this intuition to Hubble scales and super Hubble scales. Okay. So now I will build an intuition from a different direction, a more theoretical direction. Okay. And so as you know very well, inflation is a hypothesized period of in which the universe expanded, in which the scale factor accelerated. And in the simplest models, the background is quasi the sitter. Okay, the FRW looks like it's very close to a de Sitter universe. So the metric is this one, and the sitter has 10 isometries. In particular, the 10 isometries are 3 spatial translations, 3 spatial rotations, 1 dilation that looks like this, and 3 special conformal transformations, of which the infinitesimal form looks like this. We will be interested in the very late times in which you can ignore this term. Okay, so the special conformal transformation is these two terms here. Okay, so one may wonder which are the consequences of these isometries on the correlation functions of perturbations generated during inflation. The 3 spatial translations have very trivial consequence, simply conservation of momentum. Correlation functions will be proportional to a Dirac delta for momentum conservation. The 3 spatial rotations are also trivial. For the wide spectrum, for example, for the 3-point function, it means that the thing in front of the Dirac delta can only depend on the magnitude of the momentum, because there is no preferred direction. Okay. For dilations, the consequence is scale invariant. And the question is, what is the consequence of these special conformal transformations? Now, the complication in answering this question is that these symmetries are spontaneously broken by the inflaton. These isometries are spontaneously broken by the inflaton because the inflaton chooses chooses time in the sitter background. It defines a preferred time on which you take some unperturbed solution. And under these transformations, this unperturbed solution for the inflaton will transform non-linearly. Okay, so the symmetries will be, these isometries are spontaneously broken. And therefore, they will have, from your intuition built with field theory, using, you know about word identities, you know that these spontaneously broken symmetries will still have consequences on your correlation functions. Okay, so let's look for the consequences of the dilations, the special conformal transformations. And remarkably, we will show at the very end that dilations are a shift in the potential, and special conformal transformations are a constant gradient of the potential. Okay, so the two intuitions will come together. Okay, so to do it, now let's do it formally. Let us begin by writing the unperturbed FLRW metric. I have to say the L because I live in a French-speaking country. And if I don't say the L, they will always correct me. That's for Lemaitre, who spoke French. So I'm always corrected when I forget it. Okay. Now let's do the most general coordinate transformation that multiplies this thing by a factor that does not depend on space or time, and also multiplies this time part by a factor, by a global factor. So we do this. This is this general transformation. We do it, and it looks, the metric looks like this after transforming it. Note that this metric very much looks like a perturbed FLRW metric, okay? In particular, if I can interpret it as being perturbations in this constant inflaton gauge. If I set these quantities to zero, if I set epsilon to solve this equation, and if I interpret this as being the curvature perturbation, zeta. Okay, so it looks like a perturbation that I induced through a coordinate transformation. It also looks like a perturbation in the Poisson gauge. If I interpret this as being the Bardeen's potential phi, and this as being Bardeen's potential psi. Okay? But the question now, the question is, so it seems like I can induce a perturbation by a coordinate transformation. But let me turn the question around. Let me ask, so are you telling me that a physical solution to your equations at very large scales, such that I can approximate it this way, is it a gauge mode? Can I set it to zero through a coordinate transformation? Can I choose the signs in this coordinate transformation such that it is zero? We will see under which conditions this is possible. But for the sitter, the answer is very, very easy. I mean, for inflation, the answer is very easy. We know that zeta is conserved outside of the horizon for the sitter. So we know that it's constant in time. Okay. So we simply, if we set epsilon to zero, satisfying this condition automatically, zeta will equal lambda. Sorry, I forgot to say, lambda is a number. It does not depend on time. Epsilon can depend on time. Okay. So zeta will equal lambda, which is constant in time. And therefore, the conclusion is for the curvature perturbation during inflation, outside of the horizon, a constant curvature perturbation is a gauge mode. Okay. Another thing you may say is, sorry, but they told me in my cosmology course that the curvature perturbation was a gauge invariant variable. And therefore, if I do a coordinate transformation, it should not change. I shouldn't be able to set it to zero through a coordinate transformation. Well, the fact is that this is true for coordinate transformations that go to zero at infinity. This coordinate transformation does not go to zero at infinity. And therefore, the gauge invariant variables are not invariant under this kind of coordinate transformations. In some sense, this is sort of a residual gauge symmetry. Because if I start with a perturbed metric in this Kumoing constant inflaton gauge, If I start from aperture metric there, and I do this transformation, I will keep the gauge conditions unchanged, but I will change these variables. So it is some residual gauge freedom, and it will have non-trivial consequences. Okay, so which are the non-trivial consequences? So let us split these perturbations of the curvature perturbation into a long scale mode and some short scale, probably very nonlinear modes on top of it. Okay, and let me consider for now scale invariance for simplicity. The scale invariant case. So we just learned that this long wavelength mode that I can approximate as a constant is a dilation. Okay, so I can compute the endpoint function in the presence of this long mode of the short mode objects simply as a dilation of the coordinates. Okay, but in scale invariance means precisely the dilations don't do anything to your correlation functions. So the endpoint function in the presence of the long mode is simply the endpoint function without the long mode. It's simply equal to that. This means that there is no correlation between the long modes and the short modes. Because remember, the way we compute this n plus one point function is to consider the correlation between the long mode and the endpoint function in the presence of that long mode, which is the same as not having the long mode there.
Exactly, scale invariance.
Yes. Yeah. So if I assume scale invariance, this is zero. And this is very well known. I mean, this is Maldacena's consistency relation, simply recast in this language. And these are the consequences of the spontaneously broken dilations of in the sitter, okay? On the correlation functions. And I expect two types of corrections to this relation. One, of course, is when I go away from scale invariance. So there will be slow roll corrections to this. And I also expect, since I approximated this long mode as a constant, I also expect corrections going like the derivative of this long mode. So going as Q over K, okay? Now let me show, now let us see what are the consequences of the special conformal transformations in these correlation functions. And we will see that they will induce a gradient, okay? So I start in the same way, an unperturbed FLRW metric. I do some coordinate transformation. The most general one that multiplies this by a constant, by a factor that now can be space dependent, is a conformal transformation, okay? Plus some addition, plus a constant, plus a piece that depends only on time. So here again, B is it's just a constant vector. It does not depend on time, while Xi is a time dependent object. I do this transformation, I again get something that looks very much like a perturbed metric. In the constant inflaton gauge, it looks like this. So it looks like a curvature perturbation having this shape. In the Poisson gauge, it looks like this. Okay, so it looks like Bardeen potentials look like this. Why am I insisting on the Poisson gauge? Because later on I will consider the large scale structure where it's more intuitive to work in the Poisson gauge. Okay, but for now, we are talking about inflation. And again, I turn the question around. So I ask, is my physical solution for the dynamics at very large scales simply a gauge mode? Can it be set to zero through a coordinate transformation? Again, for inflation, it can be shown that it is the case, simply because I can set psi to zero, and then theta will be some constant in time, which it is, for most models of inflation, of single field inflation. Okay, so again, the gradient of theta, a constant gradient of theta, is a gauge mode. And this will have, so we can compute the correlation function now to subleading order in the gradient of the long mode. So now I do a Taylor expansion to subleading order in the spatial dependence of this long mode. And I go through the same derivation as before. So I have to compute what is the this endpoint function in the presence of the long mode, of the long mode gradient, because we already know that the constant has no effect. This is a coordinate transformation But now the coordinate transformation is not zero. It will be something non-trivial. It's a special conformal transformation. Okay, this can be done. It has some expression. This is some operator that enforces this special conformal transformation in Fourier space. It looks complicated, but it's simply this operator. It's simply the variation under the special conformal transformation. It's proportional to Q because it's proportional to, now we are considering the effect of the gradient. So it will be proportional to Q and to the power spectrum of the long mode. And now we see this thing is non-zero, even in scale invariance. Okay? And to this, we expect, of course, corrections that go like your departure from scale invariance. And we expect corrections that go now like the second derivative to a long mode. And now you may ask whether I can go on, you know, and try to reabsorb the second derivative as a coordinate transformation. Well, I want to argue that you can't, because the second derivative of a, or you can't do it exactly, you can do it only approximately, because the second derivative of a gravitational potential is curvature or tides, right? So it is a physical effect. So while before we knew that no matter how complex a galaxy, a constant gravitational field does nothing to the dynamics, now a galaxy may evolve quite differently in a curved universe or under tidal effects. Okay, so I cannot exactly reabsorb these higher order terms through coordinate transformations or similar tricks. I can only do it approximately, and there are some people doing it. There are some works in the literature. So now to summarize the inflation part, when I go away from, this is the full expression, when I go away from scale invariance, I won't drive it. You gain nothing by seeing the derivation. This first piece was the well-known, is the one due to dilations. And it was the one discovered by Maldacena in 2003 and by Kreminelli and Saldarriaga in 2004. So it's well-known. And this is the new piece that we call the conformal consistency relation. Okay. And to this, we expect corrections going like the curvature of this long mode. Now, sadly, for the three-point function, this new conformal piece is zero. And the argument is very simple. This Q has to contract with something. So it can only contract with K1 or K2. It has to contract with both due to exchange symmetry, K1, K2. And so it contracts with K1 plus K2, which is zero. So it gives zero, okay, by this very dumb reason. So it gives nothing new for the three-point function. But you would see it at the level of the four-point function and higher. Sadly, these are much more difficult to observe. But now we notice that the horizon appeared in all these arguments only when asking whether the physical solution looks like these coordinate transformations. So one may wonder whether you can take these arguments inside the horizon, okay, for the later universe. So to do that, I have to first talk about a somewhat technical point. So bear with me. So now the thing is, let me change, since I want to go to a large scale structure, let me change to the Poisson gauge. The large scale potentials you can induce through these coordinate transformations look like this. They have some expression in terms of my coordinate transformations. And the physical solutions to your dynamics at large scales, still within the still inside the horizon, will look like these coordinate transformations only if these things can be chosen to satisfy Einstein's conditions, Einstein's equations. Okay? If they don't satisfy Einstein's equations, it means that your dynamical solutions at large scale don't look like something that you can induce through coordinate transformations and therefore are physical, because they do solve Einstein's equations. And in particular, the Einstein's equations containing the non-trivial information are these two. So phi equals psi in the absence of anisotropic stress, and this one. Okay. Where V, sorry, is the velocity potential. Okay, the I of V is the velocity. Sorry. You can plug these things together, etc., to compute the curvature perturbation. And these conditions will be compatible. One can show that these conditions will be compatible if and only if this object, only if your physical solution to the curvature perturbation is constant in time, because the theta perturbation looks like this, the one you induce through the coordinate transformations, or the one that you can cancel through these coordinate transformations, looks like this. So as long as theta is constant in time, it is a gauge mode at large scales. No, now I'm in an arbitrary FRW background. And it happens that for lambda CDM, theta is constant in time, even deep inside the horizon, during matter or lambda domination. Okay? Unless there is some other fluid. But in vanilla lambda CDM,
theta is not constant in radiation.
For example, yes. So during radiation, these relations would not hold. Exactly. But they do hold during matter and lambda domination. Exactly. And they hold even deep inside the horizon. They stop.
The statement should be bigger than the sun horizon.
Exactly. So they hold as long as you are at scales where you are outside the sound horizon of baryons, so which are very small scales. And another point is that combining these relations, I can also write an expression for the velocity potential. Okay. So it means that if I cancel these Bardeen's potentials at large scales, I will cancel what I'm canceling is the large scale velocity potential. In this sense, these coordinate transformations, what they do is they go to Einstein's elevator. So you have some velocity driven by the gravitational evolution, so things falling, and you simply move to the Einstein's elevator where these things at large scale velocity is zero. You go to the Einstein's elevator where these things don't fall. Okay. In matter domination, for example, this large scale velocity one can show goes like the conformal time squared. So there you see that it is an acceleration. You are going to an accelerated frame. I'm remarking this because at the beginning, some people thought this was a consequence of Galilean invariance. It's not. It's Einstein's elevator. It's not Galilean invariance. You accelerate things. You don't boost them. It's not a boost.
I just asked about also deep inside the horizon for the same reason it works even during the transition from matter to dark energy.
To dark energy, yes. Yes, for the same reason, because there theta is still conserved. Yes, it's also conserved during lambda domination. Okay, so I can write some expression for the large-scale structure variables, and it's straightforward to write an expression for the dark matter over density. It's straightforward, of course. It's a long expression because the coordinate transformations themselves look somewhat complicated, but you can do it. Okay, and this is the expression in matter domination. And notice that I never assumed the small-scale physics to be perturbative, because they can be very non-perturbative. As I said at the beginning, no matter how non-perturbative and complicated the galaxy is, if I put a constant gravitational potential or a constant gradient, this is very simple physics. They are not physical, okay? So this is a non-perturbative relation for the dark matter over density. And I don't think there are many non-perturbative relations for
so why is it prime?
Because I extract this prime simply means that I ignored the Dirac delta in front. There should be a Dirac delta for momentum conservation in front. So I'm simply not writing it. That's everything. That's all. Of this part, this is an ugly expression, but let us look into it. This part looks like the coordinate transformation that you do to derive the inflationary consistency relations. Indeed, these pieces are exactly the ones you get for the inflationary consistency relations. Meaning that if you have during inflation something that breaks these consistency relations, for example, if your inflation is multi-field, then you would see it here because it would not satisfy this piece of this consistency relation for the dark matter over density. So it's a nice consistency relation, again, that holds from inflation, it's a calculation that holds from inflation all the way to a large scale structure, to check the consistency of your model. That's why it's called a consistency relation. Now, in the Newtonian limit, in the deeply inside the horizon limit, the term that dominates for the coordinate transformations is this one, the one with most powers of time. In the non-relativistic limit, time is large. Okay? And this is the piece that corresponds to that. And it is the same that piece that was found by other groups doing the Newtonian consistency relation. Okay, so now.
Who found it?
Pietroni and Peloso was one group, and Riotto and Kehajians was the other group.
Okay, so this is something you can, in principle, observe, right?
Not yet. This is the dark matter over density. Okay, so that's my next slide.
You can see dark matter with lensing.
Yeah, okay. If you could, yes. Okay. You could. But it's also not a gauge invariant variable. So, you would have to write it for the actual observable in lensing. Yes.
Well, I guess, I mean, they are in terms of some projection of delta, I guess, without delta.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but I'm just want to see which term here is most observable, easiest to see.
This one, I would guess. The Newtonian one, because it's the one that dominates deeply inside the horizon, yes. But if you are trying to constrain non-Gaussianity with this, you shouldn't forget about Maldacena's term, of course, because that would look like local FNL.
Right.
Sorry?
Here, this is Gaussian. You don't have.
I can have any single field model of inflation. It can be highly non-Gaussian.
But, I mean,
this holds for any single field model of inflation.
BDI.
Yeah, for example, DVI or
right, okay.
Yeah, or all these things, that, all these non-Gaussianities generated by the effective theory of inflation, mm-hmm. They are all contained in this consistency relation.
Okay.
So as long as theta is conserved, this can be highly non-Gaussian. Okay. It doesn't include local non-Gaussianity, of course, because to generate local non-Gaussianity, you should stop conserving theta at some point.
That's what I was thinking. But you're saying as long as it's single field, then it should.
Yeah, then this should hold, yes. But you can think about it as a check of the adiabaticity of the evolution of the universe, because it's an assumption we make. Okay? In particular, it will be very different if you have local non-Gaussianity. But if you are observing this in the lensing and you forget about these terms, which are smaller than this one, these terms are the ones that look like local FNL. So you shouldn't forget about them if you want precise limits on local FNL. Okay? But we observe, we also want to observe galaxies. Okay, so we should tackle the issue of galaxy bias. It is often assumed that the galaxy number over density is some function of the dark matter over density at some point. This is called local bias. It's not local in the field theory sense. It's called local simply because it depends only on some local phenomena. It depends only on the local density. It does not depend on tides, for example, which are something which are an environmental effect. But that tide is not a non-local object in the field theory sense. The second derivative of the gravitational potential is not non-local in the field theory sense. So it's, yeah. And this is why this is called local. In some astrophysics sense, it's called local.
Do you mean to say that if you see a galaxy, that means there's dark matter, or everywhere there's dark matter, you will see a galaxy?
No, I don't mean any of the two. I'm just saying that it's a function of the dark matter over density. So you could, in some places, there will be galaxies. It depends on the shape of this function.
So that sounds like the second. That is, you're assuming there's no place where there might be some clump of dark matter, but no luminous matter. You're ruling that out.
Some clump.
There's a statistical statement that the galaxies are.
Yes.
When one writes an equation like this, it's understood to hold after you average over a large volume.
Okay.
But there's statistical scatter around. This sort of
yes, of course.
Statistically speaking, yes, you expect galaxies to trace
So only rare violations.
But only what?
So only rare cases where you have tons of dark matter without luminous matter.
But
then
it depends on what you call a galaxy. I mean, if you only say big galaxies, then of course a small comes going. So it's all kind of this F could be depends on the type of galaxy.
Yeah, of course. Yes. But in general, well, it could depend on other objects, not only on the local dark matter over density. It could depend on tides or the gravitational potential or the velocity of the fluid, etc. But we already know that it shouldn't depend on the gravitational potential because we know that it's not physical. And we know that it shouldn't depend on the velocity because we know that all these things are gauge modes. Okay? So it can only depend on second derivatives of the potential or higher. The Laplacian, of course, is delta itself, and the off-diagonal pieces of the second derivative are tides. Okay, so we can generally, if you do an expansion in derivatives, you can generically write this expression for the galaxy number over density, and this was the one found by McDonald and Roy in 2009. So sadly, our arguments don't give anything new for the bias, except for the fact that you expect this relation to hold also relativistically. So this was built on a Newtonian intuition. Now we know that it's you can take it seriously also relativistically, this model for the bias. OK, so about Einstein's elevator, I got my slides mixed. About Einstein's elevator. So of course, one of the assumptions we are making, since we are going to the Einstein's elevator in order to cancel the gradient, is that the equivalence principle holds in cosmological scales. Turning it the other way around, if you don't see that this consistency relation is satisfied, maybe it's because the equivalence principle is violated. Okay. So assume, in order to see that, assume that different objects have different large-scale velocity. For example, if you have fifth force with screening mechanisms, etc., such that some galaxy has a velocity, but some more diffuse object with a lower density has a different large-scale velocity. Okay. You can reabsorb one of the velocity modes by going to the Einstein's elevator of one of these species, but you can never do it for both because they don't have the same large-scale velocity. So if you correlate both objects, if you correlate galaxies with these more diffuse objects, you will find something quite different from the consistency relation that we found. So if you find a violation of the consistency relation, it may be due to this consistency relation tests also the equivalence principle. An explicit example was done in this paper by this group, where they consider these fluid equations in the Newtonian limit, and they get that they can get a limit on this parameter alpha. You could get this limit on this parameter alpha with future surveys. So it's hard to compare this limit with competing methods because this method would be at very different scales. It probes the equivalence principle at cosmological scales, while competing methods do it at the solar system, for example. So it's a very different scales. Now let me go on with large-scale structure observers just to finish. So now that we tackle the issue of bias, we should also tackle the fact that the galaxy number over density that you observe, so now we can write a consistency relation for the galaxy number over density. So ng here is the galaxy density, the galaxy number density, and we define the galaxy number over density in this way, okay? And we want to study correlation functions of this delta g. It depends on the coordinates through the redshift and the direction in which you see the galaxies. Okay? So the coordinate transformations should be performed on those objects on this, because this is the physical thing you observe. In particular, one can show that they transform like this. So of course, the long wavelength mode induces redshift phase distortions, and it also induces some lensing, okay, which are the dominant effects. Okay, goodbye. Thanks for. And thus we can compute. So now, using this expression and this transformation, we can compute the galaxy number over density in the presence of this long mode. We'll give it will be given by some shift in the redshift, some shift in the direction, okay? And it, but since you also shift the redshift here, you have to consider that. So you will get an additional contribution proportional to the shift in redshift. That looks like this. This is what's called evolution bias in the literature. Since this is the galaxy number density, the long wavelength mode will also change the relation between your physical volume and your observed volume. So you also have this additional effect. And there are, and there is this called magnification bias. It's not very important. Of these, the most important terms are these two. These are the largest terms. These are due to redshift space distortions plus some relativistic corrections to that. And this one is due to lensing. Okay? This, but this one you shouldn't throw it away, because if you are using galaxies to constrain, if you are using the galaxy by spectrum to constrain FNL, this would look like an FNL of order one. Okay, so they are also important. And finally, one can write a consistency relation for them. So I did it in harmonic space, and this is how it looks like. So now, I hope I managed to convince you that these consistency relations are non-perturbative, and they are also relativistic. So this is, to my knowledge, the first fully non-perturbative relativistic result in the literature for the large-scale structure. So it looks like this. This is still work in progress, so don't take it seriously. I may find a typo. And that's it. That's all I wanted to tell you. So yeah, to conclude, the curvature perturbation has this additional gauge freedom that allows to write consistency relation. These consistency relations look like word identities. Indeed, some groups have derived them as word identities more formally. The same argument can be made for scales outside of the sound horizon, but it's deep inside the Hubble horizon. And this implies that one can write consistency relations for the large-scale structure. They are non-perturbative, and they can be written for observable quantities, for actual observables. And that's it. Thank you.
When you add additional field, it's the local
Yes, but this violates this consistency relation. The fact is, if you have multiple fields, you will be able to, you can write a zeta for each field. And each zeta can be conserved in time at some, yeah. But the total one may change in time because it may be a linear combination of these two that changes depending on which field dominates. So if you're observably sensitive to this total zeta changes in time, therefore it violates these consistency relations. However, each fluid by itself satisfies the consistency relations because you can set this the zeta of each to zero, but never both simultaneously. It's similar to the two objects example I gave. Yeah, that's what happened in the multi-field case. Now your question is, but your background is still the sitter, and you still have this isometry. So does it have some consequence? Is this your question?
Yeah.
I must answer sincerely that I don't know. I think not. Or rather, I think it would simply mean that the inflaton by itself, the zeta of the inflaton, would satisfy this consistency relation, but not. But then, the total zeta wouldn't. The total zeta, yeah. In these models that generate a large non-Gaussianity, what you observe is the zeta outside of the horizon, much after inflation. So,
I guess I might intuitively expect that if you have enough independent observables at late times, let's say one and one scale, two scale fields are inflation, at late times, in addition to measuring the curvature perturbation and the
Yeah, but the problem is that the inflaton zeta does satisfy these consistency relations, and this may be this is the consequence of this isometry. However, in these models with large local non-Gaussianity, you never observe. There is no way to observe directly the inflaton zeta, because it changes after the end of inflation. It changes. It receives contribution from the zeta of the other field. So you observe a linear combination of those, which would be your adiabatic mode. And then the isocurvature modes would be also a different linear combination. And I don't think there is maybe there is, but I wouldn't expect there to be a model independent way of separating the inflaton perturbations from the additional field perturbations. But maybe there is, I guess for specific models you could do it, but then it depends on your model. By specific models, I even mean the exact time dependence of your, yeah, exactly. So then you ruin, it's not very useful. That's what I expect, yes, but I haven't done it explicitly.
Okay. Thank you.